You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I have a hard time imagining that teams are going to not pitch to Justin Bour when they're beating the Marlins 17-0. I struggle with that concept.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Well, I think one thing that should be mentioned here is that obviously you can only take two players in the first two rounds, quite obviously. All right, yeah, I'm a genius, okay?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst, friendsfantasybenefits.com. Join me on this episode are Chuck and Darius. Chuck, how you doing?
I am just fine today. Plenty of hearty Twitter banter going back and forth today about the value of J.D. Martinez. And my first draft of the year is officially over as I've drafted my third Detroit Tiger starting players, which means I can probably be done drafting now. I needed late steals. I got Leonis Martin in round 40. I didn't think that was so bad.
No, it's not bad at all, because when that lineup, he's probably guaranteed to play no matter how bad he is.
And he could be pretty bad.
He could. Joining us as well is Darius Austin. Darius, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I mean, what has happened to Leonis Martin? Me and Matt had him in that score sheet league last year, and I was like, oh, yeah. Because they count defense as well. And I was like, this seems like a really great option. He's got excellent range. And then within like 6 weeks, he was DFA'd. And I was like, oh, something went clearly very wrong here. I don't know what. But round 40 sounds like a good value.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much. Round 40, I will tell you this. One of my comments today was, the player pool is very top heavy, but it's not very deep. And in a 12-team league, when you're already noticing a huge drop-off in the early round 30s, when we get to our 15-round leagues, you're going to notice that there is a lot of very, very bad players going to have to be drafted at the end of those drafts.
Yes, this is true. I mean, yeah, it gets pretty deep. All right, it's pretty gross, pretty deep. So I agree. Round 40, if you lose your 40th pick in an NFBC league, you're doing okay.
Yeah, that's true.
You can reach Chuck on Twitter at just chucking it. Darius on Twitter at DariusA64. Me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. We're gonna kind of continue with our first base preview. It's been the theme of a lot of the podcasts this week. And we're going to kind of pick up some of the guys we haven't talked about in some previous episodes. So that leaves us with some studs to talk about. So we'll start off with some studs. There's no bigger stud in the first base pool than Paul Goldschmidt, depending on who you talk to. There are some interesting questions being asked about him coming into the season, because Arizona is talking about, once again, adding a humidor into Chase Field, and that could affect power. There are people in the industry that have stated they don't believe Paul Goldschmidt is a first-round pick if the Diamondbacks add this humidor. So, Darius, we'll start with you. Is Paul Goldschmidt still a first-round pick to you?
Yeah, I think he definitely is. I think that the stolen bases keep him a cut above. I think, what was it, maybe 11 or so months ago, we started talking about the humidor. Every time they bring it up, they then seem to change their mind in a few weeks and hum and haw about it, and eventually it goes away again. So we'll see. But even if it comes in and it has a significant effect on his home production, I think he's still going to hit 25-ish home runs. He's obviously still going to play half his games on the road. Some of those are going to be in Coors Field, and he's going to provide you elite stats in the other categories. So I'm not too worried about Goldschmidt, and I think the stolen bases give him that floor that even if he does drop a little in home runs, you're not going to be that disappointed.
Chuck, where are you at on Goldschmidt?
I'm in on Goldschmidt as a first-round pick. I'm completely out on Goldschmidt as a top six pick, which I am seeing him still go in the top six in a lot of drafts. My statement is that first base had a ridiculous amount of depth last year, in so much as some of the guys that you know, we'll talk about later on this show, but breakouts from Justin Smoke and a breakout half season from Yonder Alonso and, you know, the Ryan Zimmerman rebirth, whether you believe in it or you don't, you know, Carlos Santana moving to the Phillies now and even a better spot in the lineup. I mean, there's just a lot of depth at first base, and the humidor gives me enough of a question for me to say, you know, am I really drafting this guy in the first round over these other players because I think he's going to run as a first baseman that's now in his 30s? I can't justify that as a top six pick, but I certainly could never pass him up at, say, 9 or 10.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with him as a top six pick. One, I agree with Darius. I think the stolen bases and the elite hit tool will, you know, soften any sort of blow that comes from the humidor. I also have to state, like, just because the humidor had such a huge effect in Colorado does not necessarily mean that it'll have a huge effect in Arizona. One, two completely different climates. Two, we have no idea what kind of effect it would have if the humidor is set to the same levels that were in Colorado. But we also have no idea what levels it'll set the humidor to. I mean, if anybody's ever owned a humidor, you can set the levels on those things. It's not like you add a humidor and it automatically, you know, goes to a certain temperature. Those things are going to be super expensive and really, really nice. They'll be able to mess around with how humid the room is that they put the baseballs in. So I'm not overly concerned that this is going to be a Colorado situation where we lose half the offense or something like that. So I'm not worried about Goldschmidt. I don't think you should be too. Still a top six pick to me. Let's talk about Freddie Freeman, because Freddie Freeman was off to a monstrous start last year. Got injured. Definitely, you know, had issues down the stretch because of the injury. But a lot of people are really, really buying into Freddie Freeman this year. Chuck, are you?
I like Freddie Freeman. The extra helium that I've seen in certain drafts, he seems to be a variable player. He goes sort of towards the start of the second round, towards to the middle of the second round. And I like him towards the end of that. I don't like him towards the beginning of that range. The one thing I would say is he had 71 RBIs last year. Now, granted, it wasn't terrible because he had sort of a shortened year, but it's hard to imagine that his numbers can be elite in the RBI category with the offense that they still have around him. I mean, they're talking about Johan Camargo as their starting third baseman. I mean, they have some very weak links in their lineup. They got everything they could have gotten out of their catcher position last year, and it was still not all that good. You know, he had the lowest strikeout percentage of his career with the second highest walk rate last year, and he even added 8 stolen bases in 117 games. You're going to hear a recurring theme here. I really like some of the middle round first basemen, and this is not really an indictment against Freddie Freeman, who did nothing wrong last year, to say the least, in his time played. It's just that I prefer, if I'm going to wait on a position, those positions that I prefer to wait on are shortstop and first base, and I struggle with him being like a top 15 to a top 18 pick.
Darius, are you okay with him as a top 15, top 18 pick?
Yeah, absolutely. I was already pretty much all in on Freeman before the super start last year. I get the sense that there are some people who still don't quite buy that he can hit for both the level and average and power that he's shown at times. I think he can. I think he's been getting better every year he's been in the league, basically. And I think it just kind of shows a guy who's continued to hone his craft at the plate. So, yeah, I'm absolutely fine with him there. And I'd love it if him in one of these leagues where he slides, as Chuck's talking about, because I'll be very happy to snap him up. And the other thing, of course, is if you are in a league with slightly more lenient eligibility rules, you might even be third base eligible because he played 16 games there during that weird little stretch when Matt Adams was really good last year. So, yeah, I'm 100% in on Freeman, and I think he's not all that far behind Goldschmidt, really.
Yeah, I'm on board with you, Darius. I think what we saw is legit, and I don't know if I've ever seen a park more tailor-made for a player. But the park in SunTrust that killed Julio Teheran, it just boosts Freddie Freeman up so much. I mean, it's just perfectly made for his swing, for his side. It's absolutely disgusting what the possibilities that he can do in that stadium. And I think he is at least a 30-homer bat with a handful of steals and, you know, 300, 400, 500 type line, which to me is elite. That lineup isn't great, like Chuck mentioned, but it's going to get better as they start bringing guys up. I wouldn't even be surprised to see them make another deal for another offensive player before the start of the season, especially considering what the prices are currently in the free agent market and how stagnant it's been. So, Freddie Freeman, I'm totally fine with him towards the top half of the second round.
Well, I think one thing that should be mentioned here is that, obviously, you can only take two players in the first two rounds, quite
this
obviously.
Is true.
All right. Yeah, I'm a genius. Okay. But the point being is that if you think there's similar players that are not first basemen, you have to ask yourself, if you want one of the big four starting pitchers, if you take one of those starting pitchers, you have one more position that you can cover in the first two rounds. And so, like, if you are an Aaron Judge guy, right, and it comes down to Aaron Judge and Freddie Freeman, and they're, like, right next to each other for you, you say to yourself, well, you know, how am I going to feel about my fifth outfielder versus how am I going to feel about, you know, my corner infielder? And that's where I think it does become an issue of saying to yourself, okay, well, it's not that I don't love both these players. It's that if the tiebreaker is what position do I want to cover, I will be surprised if you look at the player pool and decide that first base is the position that you want to cover in the first two rounds.
All right. Let's talk about a guy who used to be a first-round pick and no longer is, mainly because of a pretty sharp decline in the last couple of years. So I want to get your guys' thoughts on Miguel Cabrera and whether or not he is underrated, overrated, or just about right. Darius, what are your thoughts on Miggy?
Yeah, it's all health for me, and it's very difficult to say. I'm willing to take a shot if the price slides far enough, but you have to be prepared for the pretty big risk that the back issues are never going to go away. You know, the herniated disc was something that Brad Ausmus, I think, said that was going to, you know, basically affect him for the rest of his career. And so I guess this is a management issue. Saw a video of him working out the other day, looked great, but not really the same thing as swinging a bat against 95 plus miles per hour pitching. You know, the talent is there. He's probably the greatest hitter of the last 5-6 years before the injury really sapped him. So if you can get him at a decent price point where you don't feel like it's going to kill your draft, then I'm okay with it because we know how good he can be. But I would not be at all surprised if the back issues don't go away and he never gets back to being Miguel Cabrera in capital letters.
Chuck, where are you at on Miggy?
Well, he's almost 35 years old. He's coming off a season where he had 16 home runs, 50 runs scored, and 60 RBIs on a team that wasn't tanking. Which, you know, you can almost look at the Tigers right now and know that they're tanking. And the only pieces on that team, you know, that are really major league players are Miguel Cabrera and Nick Castellanos, you know, especially major league hitters. I mean, I know Iglesias is a good fielder, but this situation could not scare me anymore. And when I take a gamble, I want the upside to really be there. And I think that team and that ballpark completely limits any upside. So, and once again, I mean, when you're still, if to take Miguel Cabrera in front of guys who are in much better situations that could equally be gambles. I mean, to take him instead of waiting four or five rounds to take Ryan Zimmerman or take Justin Smoke makes no sense to me, because the health issues are not there for those guys, and the situations offensively are so much better than they are in Detroit.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Chuck. I mean, this lineup is really, really atrocious. It's really, really bad. It's Nick Castellanos and nothing. And I mean, some people are really into Nick Castellanos. I think I have kind of soured on him a little bit, considering where I was last year. To me, it's, even if Miggy's healthy, it's gonna be him and nobody on this Detroit Tigers team. And I just worry that the repetitive nature of baseball, having to go out there for 150 games, is going to be literally impossible with a guy with this kind of back injury. I don't want to believe he's done, and like Darius said, if his price falls far enough, I may take a shot in a league or two, but it's going to be in shallower formats. And it's definitely not going to be in like NFBC Draft Champions Leagues, where I can't pick people up. So 12-team formats, I'm willing to take the shot because I'm shooting for upside and in the shallower formats. But in your 15-team mixed, in your AL only, in your NFBC Draft Champions, the price would have to be pretty low for me to take a shot on him. Ryan Zimmerman is a guy who's had a lot of injuries in the past and really struggled with them. But last year kind of reemerged, was able to play a full slate of games, was fantastic. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Ryan Zimmerman for 2018?
Well, I think that the industry line on him is that he faded really, really badly in the second half. And he did have a couple of down months in the second half. But his post-All-Star break numbers last year were 17 home runs with 45 RBIs and a .270 batting average. And I think being on a team that is in the last year of its major window with Bryce Harper and having him entrenched in the middle of that lineup, I think mitigates a lot of the danger that people seem to be so afraid of with Ryan Zimmerman. I think that, you know, if you're willing to, there is injury risk. He has played over 140 games once in the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, et cetera. So there is injury risk. I think it's over 120 games once in the last 5 or 6 years. But the point being is that he's a really strong player in a good situation, and he's going towards the back end of the middle first base group. And I see this as a chance for him to be decent. You know, he was actually a much more even player as far as his home runs and stuff in the second half. He had an 11 home run month early in the season. But I like Ryan Zimmerman as a draft value this year.
Darius, do you like Ryan Zimmerman as a draft value?
To an extent, I think it depends on the league. And again, as you were just saying about Miggy, if it's a situation where it's going to be difficult to impossible to pick someone up to cover, if he goes down, then I'm going to shy away from him a bit more. I think in a shallower league, we saw what the upside can be. We were talking about this earlier. I think Zimmerman has pretty much always been good when he's healthy. And he, as Chuck said, the lineup is great. So I think that makes him a pretty attractive option in shallower leagues, where you know you can go and get that replacement if he goes down. The one thing I worry about is maybe he tries to play through something for a while and you kind of hesitate and keep him in your lineup and he drags you down for a few weeks and then eventually they put him on the DL or what have you. So that is a concern, but I think he's obviously an extremely talented hitter and he showed us last year just how good he can be when he's feeling right, and the power, you know, he tapped into that a little bit more, got the ball in the air more often. So yeah, I think I could see him being a nice value, but again, as with Miggy, we have to be mindful that there is significant risk and there's probably as we said, once in the last 5 years he's been over 120 games, so I think you have to build in probably at least a 50-50 chance that he doesn't make it even past that mark again.
Yeah, I think that is the hard part, is you're gonna have to build in into your projections or into your ranks the prospect that he doesn't get back to 120 games played, because like Chuck mentioned. Last year was the first year since 2013 that he got to, or they got over 115 games played, or broke, you know, 17 home runs or 75 RBIs, or even had a decent average. So, I mean, I see a lot of regression back to what we've seen from Ryan Zimmerman being very possible. I also love, you know, what Ryan Zimmerman's been in the past. And by the past, I mean, you know, many, many, many moons ago. But he hit, you know, at one point was a very fantastic player. He showed that the skills are still there last year if he's healthy. I just have a hard time banking on the health. And so in deeper formats, again, he's a guy I'm going to avoid because the replacement value left on the wire isn't as good. He's a guy that if you take in an NFBC Draft Champions League, you have to take Matt Adams as a backup. And I really like Matt Adams as a player this year, especially in deeper formats, because I think there's a real chance he could get a lot of time in one of the best lineups in baseball. So I'm probably not going to have a lot of shares of Ryan Zimmerman, but I understand people chasing that dragon thinking they're going to get a repeat performance of last year. Carlos Santana on a new team was signed by the Philadelphia Phillies, is going to man first base while Rhys Hoskins moves right back out into the outfield where he doesn't belong. But as far as Santana goes, Darius, what are your thoughts on Santana in a new location?
I think he's almost the opposite, maybe, of someone like Zimmerman or Miggy. He's so consistent. He's basically been more or less the same hitter. We've had some home run fluctuation. But other than that, kind of the line's always been the same. The amount of value he's provided has been pretty much the same. So I think he's very reliable in that sense. I think the only issue really is that it's not that exciting a profile now. If he is a 25 home run guy who hits 250, 260, there are guys coming out everywhere who can do that. The park is a nice place to land for him, I think. And if you're in an OBP league, then you get a great big bump. So, yeah, very kind of dependable guy, but without the kind of upside maybe that you're going to get out of some of these other picks. So, again, maybe a team construction league type issue. If you're looking for that safety, I think there are a few better places to look than Santana, but I don't see him like being a guy who's going to massively outperform his draft slot.
All right, Chuck, what are your thoughts on Carlos Santana?
I guess I never remember a hitter switching, switching teams like this that I felt had more of a lateral move when I balanced everything together. And the weird thing is you do have to balance everything together. He goes from an American League team where he sort of wasn't in the middle of the lineup all the time to a National League team where he's going to be in the heart, the very heart of the lineup for sure. He does go to a good hitter's park, and that's great, but he also goes to a lineup that is relatively a huge downgrade over what he had in Cleveland. And a lot of his road games in the division are in parks that are really hard to hit home runs in. The Mets Park is tough. The Nats Park is tough. The Marlins Park is atrociously difficult to hit home runs in. And when I balance it all out, I just see the exact player that we had last year. Now, the caveat with Santana also remains the same, that in an OBP league, he is a monster that is often dramatically undervalued. And I get that part of it for sure. But as he gets into his 30s, I mean, last year, I mean, he threw us some stolen base bones, etc. I mean, I have a hard time seeing that. He's a former catcher. He's certainly not somebody who's going to run very late in his career. And even in Philadelphia, I think his home run upside is fairly limited. You do have to put the ball in play to hit home runs. That's a new thing as well, or the biggest thing of all things. And the fact that he walks so much gets kind of crazy because I think it kind of limits his home run upside as a generality. As maybe he should take a couple more hacks in the box when he's up there.
Yeah. I actually kind of really agree with your summary, Chuck, that he probably will be the same guy he's always been when things are kind of said and done. My only fear is that this is a guy who's been not only consistent in his statistics, he's been consistent in his playing time. Over the course of the last five seasons, he's played in at least 152 games, has got over 642 plate appearances. I worry being in the National League and with a guy like Rhys Hoskins, who's going to need some time at first base every once in a while because he really shouldn't defensively be playing in the outfield, that Santana loses at-bats and plate appearances and games played and gets more days off, especially considering, you know, we're talking about a guy who's going to be 32 very early in the season and has had a pretty high-impact career in terms of playing. You got to remember, this is a former catcher. This isn't a guy who, you know, has always played at first base. He's got some miles on him. And I worry that the chances that he's going to get back to 152 games played this year is slim to none. And for that reason alone, and the fact that he doesn't have a ton of upside, you know, with the bat anyways, I'm probably not going to have shares of Santana outside of Chuck's caveat that he is a fantastic OBP guy. I mean, we're talking about a guy who has regularly been a 365 or better OBP guy over the course of his career, and is one of those guys that, you know, like I mentioned, I believe on the Tuesday podcast, like E5, where you can pretty much already write in what his statistics are going to be for the season. I mean, he's been that consistent that the range of outcomes isn't going to vary very much. I just don't think it's a huge ceiling to go along with that, which for me is a little bit disheartening in terms of whether or not I want him on my team. All right, before we move on, I got to mention I've got a deal for you. If you're a bettor, Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives all his information away for free. There's no risk. There are no signups. No money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all other sites out there. And if you want to try out some of these betting sites for the first time, click on the Bet Now link at the top of the screen and then sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit. You will get a $50 rebate from either or both sites from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. And, you know, we really thank Eli for running this promo with us. I've known Eli for a number of years. And this is an upstart of his. He's a fantastic guy. He's helped me win a bunch of money with betting advice. And I really think he is worth going and checking out. If you like betting or you have always wanted to try out betting, definitely go out and check out vertexbetting.com. All right, we got a couple more guys I want to finish with real quick before we wrap it up. It'll be a little bit shorter episode than you're used to from the three of us. I want to talk about Matt Carpenter because I feel like Matt Carpenter is going way too low. Another guy that gets a bump from the OBP department just like Carlos Santana. But Chuck, are you willing to take a shot on Matt Carpenter this year?
Well, I think the thing that you're getting out of Matt Carpenter now is that he's transformed a lot as a player, meaning that his positional eligibility, remember when he was eligible at second and third, and then he was eligible at third and first, and now he's eligible at only first, and that cuts into it. And he was never really envisioned as a power guy, and he had a couple strong power years. And so that changed our perception of him as well. And then last year, his power was down to 23 home runs, which really hurt you if you were counting on a lot more from him last year. But a lot of the contact rates and plus his walk percentage and different things like that still made him look like a pretty good hitter, and he had his worst BABIP in a long time. So there's a lot to like about him. I think some of it is you got to decide if you really think that St. Louis's offense is going to be significantly better with just the addition of Marcell Ozuna. And I think that's where you have to figure out how much you like him. Justin is right. He's going well after, the Carlos Santana group in a lot of different spots, at least a couple to 2 to 3 rounds after that. And to me, that becomes a really nice draft value. And this kind of draft value is the kind of draft value that I point at in saying the tiebreaker in the early rounds for me is me being willing to wait on first base, because I think there is a ton of upside here with Matt Carpenter where he's getting drafted.
Yeah, I got him as my util, and I believe that was my last offensive position filled in my starting lineup in my 12-team NFBC league that I did earlier this year. And I was absolutely ecstatic. I think this is a guy who should hit 25, you know, maybe more home runs. Offers a fantastic on-base percentage, like you said. I think the average bounces back quite a bit. I also think there's a chance he regains third-base eligibility. The Cardinals seem to be pretty dead set against paying Mike Moustakas to come in and play third, and if that's the case, currently he's slated in as the everyday third baseman, so the added eligibility could come back, especially if they decide to move him around the diamond again. It's all about health for him. If he's healthy, he's going to be a fantastic player, and you're getting him at a steal of a price. If he's not healthy, then, yeah, it could be what we saw last year, but even that's not a terrible floor. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Matt Carpenter?
Yeah, I think that the value is pretty good right now. The shoulder issue certainly did bother him. I think there was a period, I don't think he had any home runs in July last year, and so he was kind of almost a zero for a stretch of the season. But I think as long as that's healed, he can return some pretty nice value there. I think the Cards probably will still move him around a bit. Hope that would be real nice if they could get him the eligibility at other positions again. I do wonder if he actually maybe even hit a few too many fly balls, and that was what tanked his average last year, particularly when he didn't have the power because the shoulder was hurting him. So I think there's bounce back potential here, and it wouldn't be surprising at all to see him come out and hit 25 plus home runs with a better average than last year and really outperform where he's going right now.
All right, let's finish up with Justin Bour. Justin Bour, is going extremely late. But part of that has to do with the fact that he is virtually alone in Miami. I mean, once they trade Christian Yelich and if they move Starlin Castro, he may be completely alone. Last year, hit 289, 366, 536. They may not have, or teams may not have any reason to pitch to him at all next year. So, Darius, are you buying on Justin Bour's reduced price?
I think I'm a little bit less confident than a lot of people seem to be, mainly because I think he's still got a lot of platoon issues. And I know the splits look fine last year, but if you kind of go to the underlying numbers, the X stats, like his average was 217 and X stats slugging 389. So he got really lucky against lefties last year, and it's kind of made his platoon splits look fine. And I don't think those problems are cured. So that's an issue to me. And the other thing is what the Marlins actually think. And I know it sounds really stupid, but they did kind of keep subbing him out for people like Derek Dietrich and Tyler Moore last year. And yes, I'm aware that sounds ridiculous, but even when he was red hot, they were still doing it. And I think if opposing managers are out there bringing in lefties just to get Justin Bour out, because let's face it, who else is on the team? Then I could see him getting in subbed out again, depending on how the Marlins want to handle things. So I have some concerns there, and that's kind of overshadowing the fact that he's an absolute monster against righties, and it might not matter. But I do think that there's a risk that he maybe just loses a bit of playing time, or if they do play him against lefties, then the batting average goes in the tank a bit. But nevertheless, the power is absolutely legit, and I don't think the draft cost is so prohibitive now that you're going to mind that much if he does drop a little bit in those categories.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Bour?
I have one of my reactionary takes on Justin Bour. I have a hard time imagining that teams are going to not pitch to Justin Bour when they're beating the Marlins 17-0. I struggle with that concept. Like, I just think from a competitive standpoint, when you're up 17-0, you don't bring in a lefty and you don't pitch around him. I think you pitch to, you know, try and get him out, obviously, like you do any other hitter. But I struggle with the concept that he's going to get pitched around on that team. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that I strongly believe that no matter how bad a team still has to score some runs here and there. And that this is the kind of guy that puts a big exclamation point on my idea of being able to wait on first baseman, because, you know, last year, 25 home runs in 108 games, you know, he did have an injury and he doesn't exactly look like a incredible athletic specimen out there, but like Darius says, he crushes the ball against right-handed pitching. And I think you're going to see teams literally give their lefties the weekend off against the Marlins, etc. There's no reason to use their lefty bullpen guys that they don't want to overuse in this bullpen crazy culture that we're in now. And I think that could really play to an advantage for Justin Bour. Also, if he has a good year, you got to think that there's at least a chance that he gets moved for the right amount of prospects and maybe ends up flipping his situation midseason. So I'm very much on board as a late game play. You can get him as so late. I wish I had his ADP in front of me. And I'll look at it as Justin gives us his take. But I like Justin Bour as a late game play. I don't buy into people being able to pitch around somebody with a team that they're regularly thumping. I just don't buy it.
He's currently going about 192nd in NFBC leagues. And that I agree. It is seems a bit low. I don't know if I want any part of this Marlins offense. Maybe outside of Lewis Brinson, depending on where the ADP ends up after the inflation comes from him being traded and having a full time spot. If he's going to have a full time spot coming into the season, I've never been a Justin Bour fan. I don't think he has. He's going to be very good against lefties. I think he did get very lucky against them last year. I understand the power, and there is a thump in his bat, but he's also never played 130 games in a season at the major league level. So I wonder if he is ever going to get to the point where we can see 30-plus home runs from him. I think he kind of represents, though, maybe the line of demarcation for me in terms of guys I'm willing to go after as my first baseman in a lot of leagues. I mean, pretty much outside of maybe like Ryan Healy or Yulesky Gurriel, who I'm not a huge fan of, it gets pretty ugly pretty quickly at first base right there. And this is where I start telling people who keep saying the first base is really deep. Do you really want to be running Logan Morrison or Brandon Belt or Yonder Alonso out as your first baseman? You know, is it a great strategy to wait on the position? I don't personally think it is. I don't want Chase Headley or Mitch Moreland manning my first base spot in deeper formats. So I think while I don't expect to have a lot of shares of Justin Bour, if I get into a position where I have waited on first base and I start to get desperate, I feel like he's a decent consolation prize deep in a deep draft. All right, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Chuck, why don't you tell people what you're working on and where people can reach you?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I'm doing everything I can to get ready for the season and organizing notes and getting ready to put out some weekly content for our website, the Of Note column, which is real easy tidbits to digest, but little thoughts that hopefully you can mesh into the fabric of what you know about fantasy baseball and help you win. I'm also getting ready for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, which will be my third draft in a row where I pick out of the 9 slot. But other than that, everything is just fine. I'm enjoying our work on the podcast, and I think you'll see a big boost in what you get from us now. We're done with the team previews, and now we're going to start our pre-draft analysis for you guys.
All right, Darius, what are you working on? Where can people reach you?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I've got new content coming out every week at Baseball Prospectus. I write the fact or fiction column every Monday, where I kind of look at common fantasy beliefs or league-wide trends and kind of answer whether these are like true things or not. And then I also do the Breaker of Chains column every other week, which is about players who had a breakout season and whether we think that can continue. And then you can also find me over at Banished to the Pen, where we've just kicked off the season preview series. I will be writing about the Royals on Monday because they are the last team that was left, basically. So you can look out for that as well.
You reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can find all my work at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Fangraphs, Fantracks, Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Fantasy Alarm, and I'm sure four or five more outlets before the end of this podcast. So, oh yeah, that's right, the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational Podcast, which is called the Great Fantasy Baseball Podcast. All right. Yeah, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Chuck, Darius, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.